The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Oral questions put by members to start. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. Last night, the Premier announced a $447 million surplus. Yet he's only putting $36 million on the debt. A debt, Mr. Speaker, that I might add, that the NDP government has increased by $1.7 million in less than 2 years. So my question for the Premier, why are you carrying forward a $400 million that you should be putting on the debt?
His Honour, the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think the Leader of the Opposition has displayed a good reason why he's there and not here. Mr. Speaker, the reality is that the budget surplus first goes to pay down the capital spending of the previous year. The balance goes on the debt.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Premier obviously knew yesterday that he had a surplus, before yesterday that he had a surplus and a large one. Mr. Speaker, I would say he knew more than a week ago that he had a large surplus. But yet he chose to increase 1,400 user fees, the people of this province, Mr. Speaker. It is more expensive to register your car, Mr. Speaker. It is even more expensive to register the death of a loved one. My question to the Premier, well, how can you justify nickeling, diming Nova Scotian families while you knew you were sitting on a $447 million surplus?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you. Again, Mr. Speaker, the Leader of the Opposition demonstrates that he doesn't really understand the way in which the finances of the province work. First of all, figures that he was given were the closing figures for the former year. Those increases, which reflect the cost of providing the services, were increased for next year, Mr. Speaker. If they weren't, then the deficit next year would be larger, which I'm sure he wouldn't want.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The mystery has been solved. We asked this government to put a sunset clause when it used its majority to eliminate balanced budget legislation. They refused, but now their motives have become clear. You know that under the former legislation, Mr. Speaker, you would have to put the entire surplus on the debt of the province of Nova Scotia. And I might add, Mr. Speaker, a debt that they increased by $1.7 billion in less than 2 years. The largest increase in the debt of the province of Nova Scotia has come under the NDP government, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the Premier is, why won't he clean up his own mess instead of asking our children to do it?
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, you know, I don't know where to start with that because almost none of it is true. First of all, Mr. Speaker, the reality is if you increase the borrowing to pay for your capital and then pay off the capital expenses with this year's revenue, Mr. Speaker, that means that you don't increase the debt of the province. That's the first thing. Secondly, Mr. Speaker, in this very, very difficult economic climate, we brought the budget of this province in under the estimates 2 years in a row. First time in 23 years that it had begun, Mr. Speaker. We paid down on the debt, Mr. Speaker. Only the seventh time in 50 years it has been done, Mr. Speaker. And I would put the record of this government up against anyone in North America.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it is time for a fact check. And my question is to the Premier, because both last night and again today, he was bragging about his government is on track and that their plan is working. But they ignored the work of our very own Auditor General, Mr. Speaker, who actually measures the financial condition of our province has identified a number of measures that he believes are important for us to keep track of if we're going to go on the right track and not on the wrong track as a province. Those measures from his own report, which the budget today is silent on, include whether we are in a deficit or not, whether our debt to GDP ratio is going up or down, whether our debt service costs as a percentage of our economy are going up or down, whether we are being more reliant on our own taxation than other forms of revenue to cover our costs. And Mr. Speaker, if you measure from the time the NDP took office until today, we are going in the wrong direction on 4 out of those 5 key indicators. It is a matter of fact. It is a matter of fact. And so, my question to the Premier today, will he admit that his plan, in fact, adds to our debt $700 million since they took office, increases the amount of interest that we're paying on that debt, and makes us more reliant on others and less dependent, less independent as a province, or will he admit that his plan is not working at all?
Thank you. The Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, first of all, Mr. Speaker, all the debt that he refers to, of course, was all debt that was committed to by the previous government before we came into government, Mr. Speaker. That's the first thing. Secondly, Mr. Speaker, all of the performance indicators that he talks about are in the economic assumptions in the budget. Of course, things like the debt-to-GDP ratio are going in the right direction, as was the surplus last year in the right direction, Mr. Speaker. We have a plan to get this province back from the imbalance that that government put us into, Mr. Speaker, and we are on track and we are on target.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, debt to GDP in 2009 was 36.2%. Today it's 36.6%. That is a matter of fact. It is going up. There is more debt, not less. It is a matter of fact. We spend 10.3% of our budget on interest. That is up from the 10.0 when that bunch took over. That is a matter of fact. It is audited by the Auditor General of Nova Scotia. You do not need to take my word for it, sir. You can check it with the Auditor General. And so my question to the Premier, does he agree with the Auditor General that these are true important measures? And if so, why does he refuse to deal with them?
Honour the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To me, bizarre that a group of people who ran on a platform committed to matching stimulus spending and increasing the debt, Mr. Speaker, and who asked all of the members of the House to support that position, now says that there's something wrong with it. Mr. Speaker, you can't have it both ways. The reality, Mr. Speaker, is that all the economic indicators for our province are going in the right direction.
His Honourable, the Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party, on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, after 2 years in office and 3 budgets, it is the Premier who is trying to have it both ways because he has forgotten that he does not sit on this side of the House. He is the one responsible now. It is his debt. It is his taxes. It is his HST. So for a government that has plans and strategies for everything, 28 alone in the throne speech just a few days ago, my question is, when will we have a real plan for real debt reduction and real tax relief for Nova Scotians?
His Honour the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, in the first year, we managed to cut the projected deficit in half. In the second year, we not only cut completely the deficit, we managed to finish the year with a surplus, Mr. Speaker. We put forward a 4-year plan. We're on track. We're on target. And, Mr. Speaker, the people of Nova Scotia know it.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There are 2 things for sure we know about this government, Mr. Speaker. It has increased taxes and it has increased program spending, Mr. Speaker. One thing we don't hear from this government is a talk about economic growth. So my question for the Premier, what is your projection for economic growth this year?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Of course, almost one-third of the budget speech was directed directly at economic growth. Mr. Speaker, we put in place the productivity investment program, Mr. Speaker. We put in the digital media tax credit. We have done more on economic development initiatives than the last government did in the last 10 years. And, Mr. Speaker, a heck of a lot more than former Liberal governments did.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition,
Speaker,
on his first supplementary.
I understand it's a topic that the Premier is uncomfortable with. Our economy has stalled under his government, Mr. Speaker. Last year, the growth was just 2.1. But what's even worse, Mr. Speaker, this government is projecting less growth in 2011 and 2012. So my question for the Premier, why are you content with a stalled economy and a lack of hope among Nova Scotians?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the opposite is true. We have a great JobSecure program that we're rolling out, one that was endorsed almost universally across the province by business interests, by labour, by all the stakeholders who recognize the need for us to concentrate on learning, on innovation, on competitiveness if we're going to grow our economy, Mr. Speaker. That's our plan. I still haven't heard anything about it from the opposition caucus.
The Honourable, the Official Leader of the Opposition,
Speaker, this government
on your
projects
final
a 1.9% growth this year and next year, Mr. Speaker. That is going in the wrong direction. We are uncompetitive with our closest neighbours, Mr. Speaker, and we will continue to fall behind. Mr. Speaker, economic growth is not on the Premier's list. My question to the Premier, when will you realize you can't tax and spend your way to prosperity?
Honourable the Premier.
You know, one day, Mr. Speaker, we're cutting too much. The next day, we're spending too much. I think that's a good signal that we got it just right, Mr. Speaker. The reality, Mr. Speaker, is personal income is up, corporate income is up, retail sales is up, Mr. Speaker. That's an economy that's moving.
The Honourable Member for King's West.
Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotia families keep paying and paying for this government's decisions. You constantly give on the one hand, take away on the other. I'm talking here about personal income tax, and we know why that's up. My question for the Minister of Finance, why on earth would you hike more than 1,400 user fees and not index personal income tax to inflation?
The Honourable the Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, of course, the reason why revenue is up from personal income tax is because personal income is up, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, with respect to Mr. Speaker, I hear Mr. Angry over there on the other side shouting across me. Mr. Speaker, let me talk about this because it's been mentioned on both sides of the House. Let me talk about this idea that he's shouting across the aisle at me about lowballing revenue. Look, Mr. Speaker, the revenue estimates are done by the same people in the Department of Finance, Mr. Speaker, following the same methods and the same professional standards that were followed when that group was in government and that crowd was in government, Mr. Speaker. Although I have trouble calling them a crowd now because there's so few of them. Mr. Speaker, they are reviewed and approved by the Auditor General, and if they're going to make accusations about the revenue numbers, well, then call the Auditor General and tell him how he got it wrong.
I would like to remind all honourable members who are recognized by the Chair that they must direct all their comments and questions through the Chair. The Honourable Member for King's West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Inflation is a convenient excuse for the Minister of Finance when it suits him. He says user fees are being increased because of inflation. He ignores the fact that inflation affects every man, woman, and child in the province, not just the Minister of Finance. My question to the Minister, why have you broken your promise to Nova Scotia families and not eliminate bracket creep?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Now, the options that were available to us are indexing all of the credits and then indexing all of the brackets, Mr. Speaker. And what the total cost, which we have, the estimate of the cost for doing entire indexation is $21 million, Mr. Speaker. And the measures that we've taken today have a value of $11 million. Now, Mr. Speaker, in an ideal world, indexing brackets to inflation is a highly desirable thing. It is something that personally I would like to accomplish before my time here is done. But Mr. Speaker, Mr. Speaker, everybody understands you don't get every single thing on your Christmas list, everybody except the opposition.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm sure the Minister of Finance knew I was going to give one of his famous quotes here, because just a few short years ago, when Minister of Finance was in opposition, he called bracket creep a stealth tax. In fact, he said it was like the Minister of Finance reaching into the pockets of Nova Scotians. Mr. Speaker, how times have changed. My question for the Minister, when will you stop reaching into the wallets of Nova Scotia families?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, it's a legitimate issue. It is a legitimate issue. And the fact is that when we don't index brackets, it represents a subtle way of increasing taxes every year. And it amounts, Mr. Speaker, to a total of $21 million. Now, Mr. Speaker, when I said that, the economy was going better and there were more options available on the table. Now, Mr. Speaker, this is something that I would like to accomplish. The Conservatives call for it. They had 10 years in government and they didn't do it, Mr. Speaker. They didn't do it, and now they're telling us we should. It's something that is desirable to do, but in the current economic environment, it is not affordable yet.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the NDP said one thing before the last election, but they quickly cried poor after the election, concocting a work of fiction known as the Deloitte Report. The Auditor General himself says they inherited a balanced budget. They decided to concoct a story. An inconvenient truth was exposed that there was no problem, but they concocted a story that they could then later beat. Yesterday, we learned that they concocted a second work of fiction, which was the last budget, which was off by $700 million, Mr. Speaker. A very expensive work of fiction indeed. Now we have a budget where what is up is down, and what is down is up, what is right is left, and vice versa. Let's end the parade of fiction, Mr. Speaker. My question to the Premier, will you get into the real world and table a balanced budget today as Nova Scotians want, and then get on with the job of providing meaningful tax relief that Nova Scotians so richly deserve?
Here. Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I have to say that I'm shocked that the leader of the Conservative Party has such a poor opinion of chartered accountants, but I'm beginning to understand why. Mr. Speaker, I have to say, we have, in fact, Mr. Speaker, tabled a budget that is on target, on the right path. It is going to bring us back to balance, but it's also going to provide the services that the people of this province need. And that, Mr. Speaker, is the real priority of any government.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Premier can try and deflect to chartered accountants all he wants. Obviously, many of us, including me, have a high regard for chartered accountants. It is that Premier and that Minister and that government that I hold suspect today because of the claims that they are making that are so provably wrong. Mr. Speaker, here is a simple question. Here is a very simple question. Yesterday, we reported a surprise surplus, or the government did in this House. When, on what date, did the Premier know that we were going to have that size of a surplus this past year? What day?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, as the former Chief of Staff for the Conservative caucus would know, these figures come in over time. They are supplied by the department. You receive them in order to prepare documentation like we do, like the quarterly update. And in fact, they are constantly being updated almost on a daily basis as new information comes in.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on your final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I guess that's why it's called question period, because we'll be trying to figure out what that answer was for a good long time. Obviously, it wasn't just yesterday, Mr. Speaker, that the government knew that they had that size of a surplus, and yet they brag about it. But what's good news for the government's finances? That personal taxes are up, that corporate taxes are up, that sales taxes are up is not good news for Nova Scotians who are actually paying those taxes, Mr. Speaker. And so my question for the Premier is, will he admit that his surplus comes on the back of hardworking Nova Scotians and get on with the job of providing them with meaningful relief now?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I can't believe he just said that. He seems to be saying that having an increase in personal income is a bad thing, that having corporate income go up is a bad thing, Mr. Speaker. I don't know what in the name of Pete's sake we could do to satisfy the leader of the Conservative Party. The reality is that all of the economic indicators of this province are going in the right direction. We should be happy.
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The NDP government's decision to increase 1,400 user fees will affect Nova Scotians directly. People will pay more for mortgages, GEDs, apprenticeships, driver's license, birth certificates, and the list goes on. My question to the Premier, given that you knew about this mystery surplus weeks and possibly months ago, why did you still hike fees?
Order, please. Again, I must say that the questions or comments come through the chair, and keep saying the word you. It comes through the chair, please. So I'd remind all members to please direct your questions through the chair. Thank you. The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, thank you very much for that direction, because I know that you very wisely understand the difference between last year and next year, Mr. Speaker, and the increases in the cost of the fees reflect the inflationary pressures on those the delivery of those services. Those, Mr. Speaker, apply to next year. The surplus was last year.
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
While Leader of the Opposition, the member for Cole Harbour, condemned the practice of announcing these user fee tax increases outside the legislative session and called on the Tory government today to make user fees hikes part of the budget. Now, as Premier, that very same member of this House has pulled the very same tax grab as the Conservative government he criticized. My question to the Premier, who was wrong, that NDP member or the Premier?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As you would know, I believe that both the member he refers to and the Premier are right in this regard. It has to do, of course, with the timing of the House setting and the fact that they are coming into effect, of course, on April 1st.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Story about user fee increases in a March 2007 edition of the Cape Breton Post features the following sentence. NDP leader said there was little difference between increasing fees and raising taxes. Today, most Nova Scotians would agree with that statement, and I'm among them. My question to the Premier, after saying one thing while in opposition, doing the opposite once in power, after misleading Nova Scotians in the election campaign, after so badly mismanaging this past budget, it's clear we can't trust you. Why should Nova Scotians believe you?
Order, please. The word untrust is unparliamentary. I would ask that you retract that, please.
I'll remove it from the question, Thank Mr. You. Speaker. Why should Nova Scotians believe user fee increases are any more than a tax grab?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, user fees are in fact a revenue source that support the services that are being delivered. They are both revenue lines in the budget. The distinction, of course, is that one is directly related to the service that is being provided.
The Honourable Member for Preston.
You. Mr. Speaker, effective budget year 2012-2013, the NDP government will recoil from its commitment to municipalities and will require them to continue to pay for services and such as corrections, education, and public housing. Additionally, the NDP government would also roll back funding to 2010-2011 levels. My question to the Minister of Municipal Affairs are, why are you backing away from your commitment to municipalities?
I take it that's the Minister of Service Nova Scotia Municipal Relations. The Honourable Minister of Service Nova Scotia Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, we're not backing away from a commitment to the municipalities. Matter of fact, this was a commitment between both parties. And Mr. Speaker, one of the things that they committed to in the Memorandum of Understanding, or generally referred to as the MOU, was a statement that said the UNSM and the municipalities acknowledge that unforeseen costs or revenue losses may impair the province's ability to achieve its commitments as expressed in this memorandum, and that in any event, all are subject to the appropriation of the necessary funds by the legislature. So, Mr. Speaker, this is the agreement.
Order, please. The Honourable Minister.
That we had with the municipalities, they recognize that this may not be sustainable by the province, and that's the reason that we've changed the agreement.
The Honourable Member for Preston.
Mr. Speaker, how quickly the Minister forgets he got a surplus. Mr. Speaker, it's an irresponsible decision that will raise property taxes across Nova Scotia. Property taxes are already far too high for most people. The NDP government is downloading responsibility onto municipalities, which are already stretched to the limit. All the while, Mr. Speaker, the Minister was sitting on a surplus that appeared out of thin air. My question is to the Minister of Finance. Why are you downloading responsibilities to make your own books look better on the backs of property tax owners in Nova Scotia?
Write that down. The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, just about every single thing that member just said is wrong, Mr. Speaker. I can't help it if they misunderstand everything, Mr. Speaker, but that memorandum of understanding, Mr. Speaker, was a promise made by the previous government for the province to accept more and more and more costs from the municipalities, Mr. Speaker. It's just one more expensive promise that government made. And what this government has done is we have said to the municipalities, we've said we do not have the financial capacity at the moment to continue to accept an uploading of costs, Mr. Speaker. And if there's any increase in municipal taxes, Mr. Speaker, it is 100% due to decisions that will be made by municipalities. It will not be due to anything that this government has done.
The Honourable Member for Preston on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, municipalities, especially smaller towns and villages, cannot bear the additional cost at a time that this government claims they have a surplus. Mr. Speaker, fair and equitable funding is exactly what the NDP railed for while they were in opposition. They changed their ways since they made it into government, Mr. Speaker. What they said in opposition is not what they are doing in government. My question is to the Minister of Service, Nova Scotia, and Municipal Affairs. How can Nova Scotians trust you when you go back on your word so often?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia, and Municipal Relations.
Just for the record, Mr. Speaker, I have never changed my word. So what we've identified with the municipalities is that the charges that were being uploaded to the province were not sustainable. So we adjusted the MOU, and something that the member should be aware of, being a former municipal politician, is that he would be aware that the municipalities have budgeted those costs over the past few years into their budget. So there'll be no changes there whatsoever, Mr. Speaker. So this should not impact their bottom line or their taxes.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Finance. This NDP government just raised user fees on 1,400 government services by 2%, the same amount by which they raised the HST. Will the minister table a report in this legislature that shows the cost basis for each of these fees and why they had to be increased?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The rationale, of course, is the same rationale that the previous government had when they raised user fees by substantially more than we just raised user fees, Mr. Speaker. Now, Mr. Speaker, I just want to repeat something that the Premier has just said. When you're providing government services and the cost of government services are going up, you essentially have a choice between which base is it that's going to pay for that. Now, if they're not paid for by increased fees, it has to come out of the general tax base. And sometimes, Mr. Speaker, it is simply more reasonable, more fair, that the services will be paid for by the people who are using them rather than having everybody paying for services, whether they use them or not.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, the people deserve better. In the spring of 2009, our Premier today was concerned enough about this very issue to ask for the same information that I'm asking for today. He even suggested that to refuse disclosure of this information was contrary to the Fees Act. To the Minister of Finance, why does your NDP government reject this transparency today?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
It's actually there.
Mr. Speaker, that I hesitate to call them a crowd anymore because it's not really a crowd anymore. It keeps getting smaller. Mr. Speaker.
It's a rabble.
Yeah. Mr. Speaker.
A gaggle.
Order, please. Order, please. The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. At best, they're a hockey team, but only if everybody shows up. Mr. Speaker, look, the situation is this. The cost of government is going up, Mr. Speaker. And so when the cost of government goes up, you have a choice between finding the revenue from the general tax base, and then you choose which tax base it comes from, or from users. Mr. Speaker, in an ideal world, it's not something you'd have to do, but we're just coming out of recession, Mr. Speaker. The previous government left a considerable mess behind them, Mr. Speaker, and regrettably, this is a measure that was necessary in order to bring us back to balance and clean up the finances of the province.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on your final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, this minister and this government seem to enjoy evading questions because they don't like showing any transparency. Now, this question is important. The services that people are paying for in government, people should have a right to know why they're paying what they're paying. And unless Nova Scotians understand what the amount is, they are stuck paying whatever fees that the NDP government decides to charge. So we, the Progressive Conservative members of this House, believe that people should pay services at a rate as low as possible. And I think that's a reasonable expectation that people can have from their government. And I think, Mr. Speaker, that this member can complain about the size of numbers on this side of the House, but at the end of the day, there's a lot of Nova Scotians that would agree with us. It's very reasonable. So, Mr. Speaker, will the minister consult with his Premier and reconsider this request for information so that it may be tabled in this legislature for the benefit of Nova Scotians?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, of course, all the legal requirements have been followed, will be followed. And, Mr. Speaker, the question that the opposition continually tries to evade is to say, well, let's just cut all taxes, all fees. But, Mr. Speaker, one of the important realities is that taxes pay for services. Services are paid for by taxes. In an ideal world, I'd love to eliminate all user fees, Mr. Speaker, but then the cost would simply have to come out of the general tax base, Mr. Speaker. You can't escape the fact that if you want the services, the revenue has to come from somewhere. And maybe, just maybe, Mr. Speaker, that crowd over there would start talking about taxes and services together rather than acting as if you can talk about one without the other.
The Honourable Member for Bedford, Birch Cove.
Mr. Speaker, Mr. Speaker, a new high school is a once-in-40-year proposition for most communities. The Charles P. Allen High School community is very excited about the prospect of a new school being built with enhancements recently approved by HRM. But, Mr. Speaker, parents in our community have been concerned for some time that the new school is being built too small for our rapidly growing community. Halifax Regional School Board only requested a school built for 1,200 students, while the school population will be at 1,326 when the school opens in September 2013. And this is according to new Barriger numbers provided by HRSB, which I will table now. The registration will quickly balloon to 1,554 by 2018. My question, Mr. Speaker, is, can the Minister of Education please explain why she is underbuilding a school like this?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And to answer the question, this minister is not underbuilding a school. That school is built for the population that the numbers were given to us by the school board. And with the having a relook at the building, that school can house 1,500 students comfortably. So the school is going to be built there, is going to be adequate, and it's going to be beautiful. And I feel that the community should be very excited about this new school. And as you know, the site is, the work has begun in terms of clearing the site. So it's an exciting time.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on your first supplementary.
That's very interesting, Mr. Speaker, but I don't understand if the school is being built for 1,200 students, why does it say that it's being built for 1,200 students? Why not say it's being built for 1,500 students? The fact of the matter is it's their own calculations that indicate it's 1,200 students that it's being built for. We didn't just pluck this out of somewhere. HRSB may be trying to underbuild this school so it can request another high school be built nearby in a few years. Could the minister please indicate whether she has in fact received a request for another new high school to be built in the Ravines area of Bedford?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. There have been no requests for any other school. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Parents are concerned about protecting the lab space at the new Bedford Hammonds Plains High School. All too often, labs are repurposed as classrooms, which means they cannot be used as labs. Currently, grade 10 students at Charles P. Allen, which was built for 800 students and now houses 1,200 students, currently those students cannot do their weather experiments that are part of their curriculum because they do not have enough access to labs. So my question for the minister, will you guarantee that the labs at the high school being built to replace Charles P. Allen High School will not be repurposed as classroom spaces?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. This new school that's being built has met all of the criteria for all of the numbers of classes that will be accessing the labs. There is going to be adequate labs and more capacity than even necessary. So this is a school that's built in with everything taken into consideration so we can make sure that our students that are educated, that we're educating in terms of our science curriculum, they're going to have nothing but the best in terms of their lab and time in the lab. Thank you.
Thank you. The Honourable Member for Yarmouth.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, last night in grandiose fashion and not so humbly, the Premier announced to this House that due to the interesting budget practices of the NDP, which includes an HST hike, that the province will have a $446 million surplus this year. Mr. Speaker, back in 2009, the people of Yarmouth just needed $3 million to keep the ferry going for one more year to allow the community to transition while maintaining that vital sea and economic link. My question to the Minister of Economic and Rural Development is, Mr. Speaker, with the surplus being what it is, will the Minister admit to this House that not giving that $3 million to the ferry has had marginal, if any, impact on the province's four-year plan to balance the books?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, I'm pleased to stand in my place. And first of all, and I would bring to the attention of the House that the $3 million that I've heard the member opposite quote, that the number wasn't $3 million. It was much, much larger than that. And Mr. Speaker, as we all know, as we all know now, Mr. Speaker, we've been down this road, is that the ferry, the Cat Ferry, wasn't a viable, sustainable operation for Yarmouth. The ridership had reduced by over 70%, Mr. Speaker. There was not a business case there, Mr. Speaker, for continuation of the ferry. We did something that was a hard decision, a tough decision, but we had to think of what was in the best interest of all Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, let's review the math. $9 million. To subsidize that ferry for one more year. The province would all have to pay $3 million to cancel the contract already, so we're down to six. The municipalities came up with another three that they asked the province to match. So $3 million from this province would have been required to subsidize that service for one more year. $3 million, that's it. I understand why the cabinet ministers aren't aware of it, because the premier wouldn't even bring that request to cabinet when the municipalities came forward with a proposal. Mr. Speaker, there's been no evidence given to this House to suggest why this decision was made. Nothing tabled. The only thing given to us in the public is that they didn't have the money to do it. But lo and behold, we have tons of money today. So my question to the minister is, in light of this budget, will the minister admit that the decision to cut the Yarmouth Ferry was political and not based on the financial position of the province?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I've got to say it disappoints me to hear the member opposite talk such rhetoric when he knows, for one, certainly this government and myself as minister have always tried to work cooperatively with that particular member. I would also say, Mr. Speaker, that this funding of coming from municipalities, I don't know where that's at, because I've never heard of it. We were the only game in town, Mr. Speaker. I wrote to the U.S. government, to the federal government, Mr. Speaker. The best of my knowledge, there was only one game in town, and that was the provincial government, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I know that the members opposite would like this ferry issue to go away, but I'm sorry, too many people are suffering because of that decision. It's not going to go away until there's a ferry back in Yarmouth. Now, Mr. Speaker, with the leader of the official opposition committing a Liberal-led government to funding a viable service in Yarmouth, the restoration and long-term operations of such, and with the member from Queens issuing a statement insinuating that the Liberal position on the ferry was the same, in fact, as the NDP's position, and with the minister's recent comments here, in talking about cooperation and that sort of stuff, I would like to ask this minister if he can identify any funding that the government has in its plan that'll be in place to restore the Yarmouth Ferry and to ensure its long-term operations.
Yes, that's right.
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we stand. Certainly, I, as minister, stand by the decision that was made by cabinet, and I reiterate, it was a tough decision, and tough decisions are hard to make, and we had to make a decision, and we made one. Mr. Speaker, we have made a large investment in the southwest region of the province of Nova Scotia. We launched just recently. I was down there on Sunday and Monday with the launch of My Nova Scotia campaign. Mr. Speaker, we've invested another $400,000 in Explore Our Shores. Mr. Speaker, we've invested $150,000 in the $250 anniversary. Mr. Speaker, we continue to make investments. There's an ask that that's being considered now for the Southwest region around a task force. We were looking at that, Mr. Speaker, and we are seriously considering it. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. As much as I would like to continue on that one, I'm not. The government's throne speech promised legislation that will be soon introduced to bring lower drug prices for Nova Scotians who rely on pharmacare. Mr. Speaker, lower drug prices are a good thing, but my question to the Minister of Health and Wellness is, will she commit today that no rural pharmacies will close as a result of her drug pricing legislation? Will she guarantee that seniors and other Nova Scotians will not need to travel great distances to get medicines that they need?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this government wants to ensure that Nova Scotians pay fair prices for generic drugs. We know that Nova Scotians are paying much too much for drugs, and the plan that we will be bringing forward in this session will address that and will ensure that seniors and others in Nova Scotia get fair prices. We consulted with pharmacies, including rural pharmacies, and we will have a plan that will serve this province very well, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on your first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We know from the Ontario experience that reducing the price of some generic drugs has meant manufacturers simply stopped making them. What has the minister done to ensure that the drugs Nova Scotians need will still be available after her legislation is enacted?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the shortage of generic drugs is complex and can't be attributed merely to the initiatives that have been taken in Ontario, and in fact other provinces have taken initiatives as well and are in the process of doing so. But as I said, our plan will be a Made in Nova Scotia plan, a plan that was developed with a great deal of consultation with a broad spectrum of groups, including pharmacies, pharmacists, seniors organizations, and others. And I'm very much looking forward to unveiling this plan in the not-so-distant future, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on your final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The effect of lower drug prices will inevitably mean lower profits for pharmacists at a time when the government is expanding the scope of practice for pharmacists. How much of the drug price savings will the minister use to compensate pharmacists for the new services that they will soon perform for Nova Scotians when will she roll up her sleeve and develop a tariff or a fee schedule for those folks that are going to be offering these great services that they've asked for and the department has asked for as well?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we believe in treating all sectors of our healthcare sector fairly, Mr. Speaker, with respect to compensation. And Mr. Speaker, pharmacists have been a group in our healthcare system that have a much greater capacity to provide services to Nova Scotia than they've had an opportunity to do. And the work that we will engage on and we're embarking on with this really important group of healthcare providers is going to see a real benefit for pharmacists, but more importantly, I think, for members of our community and people who rely on their services. That's our objective, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of the Environment. Mr. Speaker, in June 2010, the Minister of the Environment promised concerned citizens in the Hillside Trenton area that a health study would be conducted on fly ash emissions from the Trenton Power Station and the impact on the health of residents in that area. As we get close to June 2011, almost a year, Mr. Speaker, will the Minister please tell us where is the study?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Through you to the member opposite, I think there is a disconnect or a misunderstanding here. I met with the members of Trenton, and there was discussion around a study that was being conducted by Health and Wellness, and I think there's a misunderstanding there. And truly, we met with them people, we discussed their issues, and I look forward to meeting with them as we have done in the past, and we'll continue to do that. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on your first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I don't think there was any misunderstanding by the residents there on what the minister said, but he did, on March 24th, 2011, many months later, write an email to the residents saying he, in fact, had nothing to do with the study that he announced would start at that June meeting, and the one he was talking about was already underway at the Department of Health Promotion and Protection. So, Mr. Speaker, my question for the Minister of Health and Wellness is, where is that study, and when will it be released to the public?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I haven't had an opportunity to meet with the residents from the Trenton area. But Mr. Speaker, they, if they request a meeting with me, I certainly would be prepared to meet with them. I understand that the medical officer of health for that district health authority has in fact been involved in this issue and has it well in hand with respect to whether or not there is in fact a need for a study, whether or not this is a public health issue. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on your final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I think there's a lot of residents in those areas that will be very surprised to hear the Minister say that, since I will table emails from the Minister of the Environment claiming the Minister of Health already had the study underway, and a letter from the Minister of Health claiming the Minister of Environment already is responsible for this. So, and they copied one another on that email, so I'm surprised that the Minister of Health seems to know nothing about this. And Mr. Speaker, furthermore, the fact is that in these emails, it is with the tacit support of the members from Pictou Centre, Pictou West, and Pictou East, all of whom were also copied on these emails regarding these studies. So, Mr. Speaker, I'll return to the Minister of the Environment. One of them must know what's going on here. Would you please tell the members of this House and the people of Pictou County, since Mr. Speaker, this minister told those residents this study was already underway, will the minister take responsibility for the study and tell us when it will be completed and released to the public?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and through you to the member opposite. Again, I point out that I believe that there's a misunderstanding here. We met with the people in that particular area, and we referred to the study that was being conducted through the Health and Wellness Department. And I take full responsibility of that. I met with them people, and it's a case of misunderstanding. So we're here, our staff has been working with that community, and we'll continue to work with that community and look forward to in the future. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Oh, that's a new question. Yeah, Mr. Speaker, this question is for the Minister of Energy. Yesterday, in a sort of odd and unusual joint statement, the Minister of Energy and the Minister of Environment announced that they will do an environmental review on hydraulic fracking. Now, obviously, Mr. Speaker, at time, and I say today, we're very happy to see the government finally take on that review. I asked for the government to conduct such a review last August and again in the fall, as well as put a moratorium on permits during that review, both in last August and in the fall. Now, Mr. Speaker, I'd be remiss if I didn't note the fact that it did not include a moratorium on the issuance of any permits, unlike all other jurisdictions in North America, which are currently doing reviews. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister of Energy, why did he not put a moratorium on the issuance of industrial permits for hydraulic fracturing during the review process?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for the question. Moratorium in the province of Quebec, it's only on new developments, and there's actually 31 wells that are still being hydraulically fractured. But here in Nova Scotia, we have none. We have no applications for this process, and I wouldn't say there's any on the agenda during the period of time that we're going to be doing the study. So really, there's no need for it.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Energy just gave the reason why there should be a moratorium on the issuance of permits, because Quebec ran into an issue where they couldn't put a moratorium on projects that were already underway, yet just as the Minister said, there are no applications there yet, so you put the moratorium in so industry knows what the rules are. Mr. Speaker, I'll follow up with the Minister of the Environment. As Minister of the Environment, why did this Minister not demand that there be a moratorium on the issuance of industrial permits for hydraulic fracturing while the review is taking place?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Well, thank you again, Mr. Speaker, again to the member opposite. Well, first of all, I want to tell you to the member opposite that I have the greatest confidence in the joint council or the committee that is working on this. And these people are senior staff. They understand this issue. They're going to go out and gather information from all of the jurisdictions. And I'll repeat what the Minister of Energy just said. There's no urgency to this issue. We are taking the right approach, Mr. Speaker. And I also want to add a footnote to this. Since there are media release on this subject as of last night, our neighboring province from PEI has shown interest in our leadership. Mr. Speaker, that is a very good comment when you have a neighboring province recognizing leadership on an issue that is protecting our environment. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
I'm a little bit surprised, Mr. Speaker, that the Minister of Environment doesn't think there's any urgency to this issue. There are hundreds, perhaps thousands of Nova Scotians who feel otherwise, and I'm sure he's received the emails and phone calls, and I think certainly the Minister of Energy understands firsthand from his the demonstration at his constituency office. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to direct my final supplementary to the Minister of Energy. The other thing missing in this is there is no timeline on the completion of this review. Now, we know this government has a history of missing deadlines for everything from gambling studies to natural resource studies to wetland studies, all of which have been overdue. Yet, Mr. Speaker, why is it that this government would not put a deadline for the completion of this review?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We actually, in the press release, said yesterday the study will be done by early 2012, and with that, we'll be consulting with Nova Scotians, we'll be listening to experts in the field, and we will use the best resources to get the best possible regulations to protect Nova Scotians and their drinking water.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister responsible for natural resources. Your government has been discussing a new natural resources strategy since June of 2009. I asked the Premier and the former Minister of Natural Resources last fall for a definition of clear-cutting, and neither could come up with an answer. Will the new Minister of Natural Resources today please give his definition of clear-cutting?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And clear-cutting is an issue in Nova Scotia. We made a full commitment that we're going to reduce clear-cutting in this province by 50% within a five-year period. We're absolutely sticking to that. There are many different definitions of what clear-cutting is. And we're listening to Nova Scotians to see what they determine that the clear-cutting should be defined as.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on his first supplementary.
Very much, Mr. Speaker. And I have to admit, even though the former minister didn't give an answer, it was better than that one. Mr. Speaker, the Ecology Action Centre, the Federation of Nova Scotia Woodlot Owners, the Nova Scotia Woodlot Owners and Operators Association do not think a general ban on clear-cutting is a viable option for forest management in Nova Scotia. Last October, these leaders in Nova Scotia forest industry defined a clear-cut as, and I quote, the final harvest of a stand of trees that removes most of or the entire overstory when either of the two following conditions are met. One, the area of the stand is reduced to a stocking level below the sea line threshold of acceptable growing stock. And two, an opening in the canopy is created that is greater than twice the height of the surrounding trees, measuring as the diameter of a circle or the narrow side of a rectangular block.
Question.
Well, it's hard to ask a question if you don't give me time to finish the get some ready information. But the question is, of course, Mr. Speaker, does the minister agree with these people who manage the forests of this province?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I agree that that's one definition of what clear-cutting might entail, but if you talk to Nova Scotians, you talk to foresters, you talk to environmentalists, there's different definitions of what a clear-cut means, and we're going to continue to work with Nova Scotians as we develop our natural resources strategy. We're going to come forward with the definition of that, and we'll have a working group of all stakeholders to determine exactly what forest policies we should be following in this province, including a definition of clear-cutting, and we will very shortly have a better handle on what exactly is included in our natural resources strategy. So stay tuned, and you'll get your answer. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West.
Mr. Speaker, if the Minister doesn't agree with the definition of clear-cut, will you not provide a definition, and you can't provide a definition?
Order, please. The time allotted for oral questions put by members has run out.
This podcast was previously aired on Legislative Television. The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.